Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Everybody, it's James. Welcome to the Queen Comedy Podcast. And today I have someone amazing for you. So I met this person through another comedian, as is all comedy connections. It's always through someone else that you knew and that you were friends with. And they were like, oh, I have this other friend. And so we connected via Instagram. And then she was doing a show and she was like, hey, my rapper dropped out. Can you come do that? Now, I was coming just to watch the show and just support, right? Because you guys know I love the support comedy. So I was like, oh, I'm just gonna go. She's like, hey, can you come do the show instead? And I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't prepared for that. I was just, today was gonna be my hangout day for comedy, so I jumped on it. But she's awesome because she's a producer, she's a writer, she's done sketch comedy, she's been on the Netflix as a joke festival. She's from, like, there's so many layers here that when you guys see her and talk to her and hear from her, you're going to be like, all right, I'm going to be a fan. And if you go watch any of her clips on Instagram, it's hilarious. So please welcome Nishi XL, right? Why do you say it XL? Well, we're going to ask about, we're going to talk about that because that's not your real last name.
Well, you're right. I'm a medium. I'm not extra large.
XL. I'm a double XL, I think.
No. Right? No, it's because the last name is phonetic for XL, which is a made up white name that my husband's family decided to do. And I wanted an easy name, so I married a white guy, but that's not what happened. So everybody kept asking me, what is that? What does that mean? Where does it come from? So I'm like, okay, just two letters, XL. It also makes my parents think that I'm like working because it sounds like Microsoft Excel. So, you know, so it makes them happy. So I'm sticking to the XL.
Now, I was reading your bio because I was like, oh, I always read bios. But I love that stand-up comedian, first-generation Indian, Pakistani-American, born in a war zone and moved to L.A. And I was like, so she was born in a war zone and then moved to a war zone? That sounds terrible, right? Because L.A. is a war zone. Let's not lie about it. Where were you born?
I was born in Kashmir. So that literally is a war zone.
War zone, yep.
Yeah, I mean, and if people from bougie L.A. think getting their Starbucks is a war zone, then they need a reality check because somebody misspelling your name on your Starbucks cup is not as big as just, you know, the oppression that happens in Pakistan. I actually got in trouble over there. They like Amazon Prime shipped me out of Pakistan because I was 4 years old and I like kicked a guard because he was trying to throw me in jail for breaking curfew. And they're like, we can't have her here anymore. So I was like the Dennis the Menace. Well, that's such an old reference. I got kicked out like Fresh Prince of Bel Air and then came here. So not as nice as Bel Air, but you know.
Did your parents come with you or did they do Fresh Prince of Bel Air? You just sent you by yourself
here? Well, I came family. To my aunties in San Gabriel Valley and I lived with them and they were, you know, they were rich for their type, you know, right. They were like well off people for their type, but yeah, my parents came and everything. But yeah, so that's that was a real war zone. We had a curfew, and the curfew was so ridiculous. 3 o'clock. I mean, come on. Ugh. That's before
I'm starting
bingo.
My day.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's not even feasible. Like three, that's in the middle of the day. The sun doesn't set in Pakistan till 7. You know, it's like, it didn't make any sense. So I was just a rebel, and that's what brought me to the United States. And then I saw Skid Row, and I was like, wow, Pakistan's better than this place.
See, that's what I say. So you're a sketch writer. You did, you've done a lot of stuff. Now talk to me about your comedy journey, how you got into comedy, how did that process, when did you kind of start that? Because obviously you're a rebel, so which means you're an idealistic person, you kind of want to do your own thing, which is a lot of comedians are. We very much have these internal dialogues that tell us to say things that we're not supposed to say or do things we're not supposed to do. We're a little rebellious. How did you get started in comedy? How did that happen? You like, because we have, like, again, all those thoughts, so let's hear from you.
Oh man, so my origin story starts way back in the womb, but I felt like I was primed for comedy because my family is just so weird. Like everything about them was so abnormal, you know? But I actually started out in corporate America. I was hired as a project systems analyst 3. Okay. Which I have no clue what any of those words mean. And I was hired because they were like, she's Indian. She can get the job done. So they threw me in this bullpen called Bender Palace, which is just like a nickname for where all the Indian people are on the second floor. And they all have, you know, curry at lunchtime. So they want to put us all there because they don't want that smell to go on the other floors. And I'm not even making this up.
Wow.
And yeah, so when I was like, I don't belong here. Like, I don't want my hair to smell like that. And I didn't do any work. I probably put in 1 year of like really trying and putting in work because I ended up getting my MBA. I was like really trying to move up, you know, as a comedian, like you want to be the best. Like that's yeah. just part of your personality. You're like an alpha because you yeah. have to own the space you're in. So they didn't like that. I was so young. They didn't like that. I was getting ahead of them. And you know, there was people in my position that were like 20 years older than me. And so they never promoted me. They were like, you're wow. just going to stay in this position. And so I just started making memes of the management and I started sending it around. And like everybody was just, they were like, where's this stuff coming from? But we're having a great time. And it's the first time that they had laughed, you know, nobody there. Everybody was so serious and it just really bothered me. So we would go into the conference rooms and then we would literally just have like little open mics and I would be like, okay, this is what I think about your stupid project status report and just like write material about that and, you know, just vent or whatever. And then one day I was part of this professional group of whatever, it was BS, but they were doing like an improv sampler course. So I was like, whatever, I'll try it out. And I went to the second city and I did this improv sampler course. And I will tell you, I got so many laughs that I couldn't sleep at night because I was like, I'm in the wrong place. This place is where I need to be and not necessarily Second City, but I need to be on stage and I have a lot to say and I have a story to tell. And I didn't feel any discomfort speaking in front of people because I already had that in me. So yeah, so that's basically how I got started. And I started, I auditioned for Second City and then they put me in their grad review. So we would write sketches and perform it every month. And it was just, it was so different from what I was used to. And I thought, wow, I have been doing the wrong thing forever. And that's where I kind of like, can I say something about Jesus or no?
Yeah.
Okay. That's where I really felt like God was telling me to speak. And to have that presence with the people that I'm supposed to, you know, I don't know, like minister to through my speaking, because I was silenced for so long, like, cause I was an ex-Muslim. So, you know, women are not allowed to speak. Like you don't, I mean, you know, the ones in America, it's a different story, but back in Pakistan and stuff, you're just not given the same rights, even though you might be free. You're not allowed to have the same social presence. And in fact, they look down on you if you're loud and rambunctious, because then they think you're like a loose woman or you're, you know, just like a weird, wow. It's like a weird mentality. So, just God was like, he's like, I'm going to break these things off of you and you have permission to speak. And when you go on stage, I'm going to fill your mouth. And I was like, oh my gosh, you were talking about listening to, you know, the little things that go on in your head. I'm like, wow, God is giving me punchlines and I'm totally cool with it. Cause he just like accelerated my growth in those 5 years. I took a sabbatical. I went to ministry school. I was like, I need to get myself cleaned up. So I did all that. I came back, I would read the Bible for like 3 hours a night. And then another 3 hours I would watch Impractical Jokers. And I was living alone in an apartment at the time. I would just be like in conversation with God. And then I would watch a comedy show and I was like, wow, comedy is the most fulfilling thing. Like I want to help somebody who's going through, you know, deep emotional pain and is trying to escape that. So that's kind of how I got started.
That is awesome. That is like the best. Wow. That is a super awesome origin story. Mine is like not that good at all. So but I feel you on the MBA thing, because like getting your MBA, you feel like you have, like I have my MBA too. It's like, you have to like keep, you want to get ahead. And the world says you have to do these things to get ahead. But by the time I got my MBA, I was like, I'm so unfulfilled. I don't want to work in corporate America anymore. I hate this. Like I hated it every day. But I was the guy at work too who would make people laugh, right? That was, whenever anyone, I would hear this down the hallway. I'd be at my work, by my desk working or whatever. And I hear my boss be like, James, come in here. We want to hear something. And I'm like, oh man. So I have to go in the office. And then they're like, they'll like ask me to say, like, talk about this or do whatever. And so I would be in front of like a bunch of people in my office just saying funny, crazy stuff. And we like, they made me do like a company meeting, do stand up or whatever. I had never done stand up before. But like, just get up there and say funny stuff. Say the funny stuff you say in the office. And I'm like, you're going to get me fired. Like y'all are going to get me fired because stuff I say in the office isn't always HR appropriate. Like HR is not going to love the things that I say. So I wasn't cussing or anything, but like, you know, right. You tread the line into HR is like, you can't say that, you know? And you're like, all right, guys, come on. So I feel you on that. Now, sketch writing, did you perform in the sketches that you wrote too, or did you just write them? You did. Okay.
Oh yeah, I wrote them for myself. Awesome. That's kind of the rule with sketch, is if you want, you got to write for yourself and put yourself in that character, you know. Right. But it was a sketch writing team, so whoever had the strongest sketch would make it to the show,
right?
And then I was kind of like the diversity hire. So they were afraid to say no to me. So all of my sketches made it. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I was new at it. I had never written a sketch before. My entire life, actually, when me and my husband were talking about this the other day, and I'm doing a new series right now on social media that I'm about to release. And it's about my fifth grade teacher who told me I was so dumb that I'm not going to get anywhere. And I was dull and stupid. And she would call me names, straight up call me names and put me in the penalty circle. And I just contacted her and invited her to my show. And I also contacted the straight A students that she loved, that she's still friends with, James. This is over 30 years ago in elementary school. She's still friends with that class of 1994. I was like, wow. What is, cause it was weird because I was looking at it and it was the same class. And I stalked her social media cause it's public. And it was like, all her posts were tagging the same people from that class.
Oh, gosh.
And I was the black sheep of the class. She hated my guts. She hated my guts because she was complaining about losing weight. And I'm like, why don't you just take up smoking? And she's like, no. And I'm like, I heard on the news that you lose weight with cigarettes. And she's like, no, but I'm going to get cancer if I smoke cigarettes. And I'm like, well, then at least you'll be skinny. And she got so mad. That was the thing that totally set her against me, you know? And so I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why I trailed off here, but.
No, that's exactly like, no, that's very similar to like my childhood too. We're like, I was an introverted student who would write and draw to like keep myself occupied in class so I wouldn't cause trouble, because I knew I would. And so I would finish all my work. I got good grades or whatever, but I would like write and draw or whatever. And then my teacher took that stuff away from me. And now I had nothing new. So I would talk to people and entertain. And then she made a paper dunce cap with the word dunce written on it and sat me in a corner for the rest of the year. So I had to sit in a corner in the classroom with a dunce cap on for the rest of the year.
What?
Yeah. Oh, in Texas. God. This is in Texas, by the way. So
that is public humiliation.
Yeah, but that was allowed in the 80s and 90s. You could do that. You just couldn't get away with that. I got spanked at school, for goodness sake.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That is way worse. I never got hit. I just got put in the penalty circle, and it's like a circle on the floor where people have recess. So you can watch everyone do recess, but it's like Squid Games. You can't like move outside of the line, or you get shot or something.
So what year did you start this stand-up journey? Like, what year was that?
I want to say like almost 5 years ago now. So I'm really bad at arithmetic. So whatever that year was.
I think it's like 2017. Is that right?
Yeah, like 20.
Does that sound right?
2018, probably. Yeah.
So and we started around the same time period. I didn't start till I was about to turn 35 years old. Like, literally, I didn't start stand up until then.
Same. So I was 33. Yeah, I remember. I was like, I'm Jesus age. I can do whatever I want.
I love that. That's awesome. So you started with improv. You went to sketch. Then you started doing stand up. And now you still write sketches? Is that like, do you still like doing that?
I don't enjoy it. I'm not gonna really lie. I really don't enjoy it. It's not grounded in reality. And that is what makes it unattractive to me. It's fun to watch when you see Key and Peele and you see other people do it, because it's like super silly type of humor. And I'm a huge fan of, you know, Dumb and Dumber, silly stuff. It makes me laugh the hardest. But who I am as a person, I'm not silly. Like, I can make observations, but I'm not like, you know, you have to be a little bit kooky and do like weird characters and stuff. And I just don't want to do that.
I should do sketch then. Cause I do characters. Like, the other day I had, like, you know how you always get like the calls from, like, your phone will not tell you it's a spam call or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I answer those. And then I talk to people in crazy voices. Like, I had one the other day, like, it was from like one of the I forgot if it was Democrat or Republican. One of the party people called me, and I pretended to be a really old man. You know, like, I was messing with the dude, knowing that he would like keep think I was being serious and just like keep going or whatever. Anyway, I just went crazy. I sent it to my buddy. Like, I recorded it as we were on the phone. I sent it to my buddy. He's like, I can't, you're insane. Why would you mess with somebody like that? I'm like, why not? They're taking up my time. Yeah. Why not mess with them? You know what I'm saying? So I like characters and stuff. I should probably do more sketch stuff, because I like voices. I like being silly characters. I like doing that. But your stuff, even though it's not silly, it's so funny and so direct on like life. Like, when you say something, there's two responses that I immediately get when you do a joke. You go, yeah, and then laugh. Like, it's like, yes, this is right, and then laugh. Mm-hmm. You find that a lot happens a lot to you? Like, the head nod and laugh?
The nods?
Well, not just the nod. Sometimes that does happen. That happens to everybody. But the nod and laugh. Like, people are like laughing, like nodding, like, oh. You know, that thing, do you get that a lot?
I recently recorded my audience at this big theater that I did, and I was like looking at what kind of laughs they have. So I did see like a lot of this and like the head movements, and I'm like, okay, that's great. Cause I want to tell my story, and you know, I'm not saying everything I say is true, because a lot of the stuff is like made up too. Like, you know, my dad's name is not like that's just I wish it was, but you know, but that's kind of like I play around with that stuff, but I do like to bring some truths out, which I think need to be told. So
no, and that's the truth. That's the best part of comedy, is comedy that has truth in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if there's truth in the comedy, people can connect with it, because we all have the same, most of the time we have the same life experiences, right? We have family, we have, you know, somebody that we know that has kids, or we have kids, pets, or they have pets, like all those life experience things. That's why, you know, airplane jokes were huge in the 80s, because everyone had been on an airplane. You know what I'm saying? Like, we all have these shared experiences. So when you do that, if it comes from a place through, you can tell when a comedian tells a joke that has no reality in it whatsoever, because the crowd just shuts down. And then us as comedians, I don't know if you do this, I'm like, ooh, no, shouldn't have started there. That's not where you go. You got it. There's got to be a nugget of truth. I always tell everyone, start with a nugget of truth. It has to be a little bit, because people have to get on board and say, okay, I can buy into this. And then you can get crazy with it later on. But if you go crazy right away, no one's going to buy into your joke, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's like movies that you watch where you go, oh, this would never happen. Like, as much as you're like, this is an interesting film, this would never happen. So you can't be invested in the film, right? That's the great part of like why people like the Marvel Universe is like, at first they're all humans and then these crazy things happen. So you get the negative, like, oh, this could happen to me, right? That's why comic books and all that stuff works. Cause this, oh, I could have this happen. Like, I could be Superman or Batman or whatever, you know, like, well, maybe not Superman, he's from another planet, but like the Hulk or whatever, you're like Iron Man, you could be any of those things, right?
So, right.
Now you run a show, is it every month at Flappers?
Yes.
And how did you get started doing that?
I literally just showed up at their door and I was like, hey, I want a show. And they're like, okay. Because the first show that I produced was in 2019 and it was so dumb. I called it Foreign Buffet, like Warren Buffett, but like, yeah. I don't know what I was doing, but it was just, you know, stupid puns, but it was to benefit the Red Cross. And because I had gone through some stuff and I was like, I need to do this because somebody gave me their blood. So that show was completely sold out and we actually had to reject some people and it was like a huge hit and everybody was so supportive and I had never produced before, never even asked how to produce. I just did it. So I thought, you know what? I think giving people opportunities in my city is a big thing because I see so many super funny comedians that don't have like a huge following that I feel like I want to work with them and they're going to bring me up and I'm going to bring them up, you know, and also like people who just deserve a chance because they just are not represented. So I brought them the show called Third World Problems and it was all immigrant lineup. And they're like, all right, you know, you can have our Yoohoo room. And same thing happened. The show started getting sold out, you know, and it was just like a really good time. Like it was so much fun. And I learned so much from producing that I wouldn't have learned just as a comic. Cause now I'm even more respectful of people that put me on their shows. Cause I know all the stuff they have to go through. And then, you know, last minute cancellations, like, people that just don't respect the crowd, people that run the light, like all of these things, I think it helped me become more professional and also helped me learn the business side, which I think a lot of comics are missing because it's not that they're not funny. It's that the people that have the business backing are the ones that are going to make it. And unfortunately, it is a technical thing. You have to learn about marketing. You have to learn about distribution. And producing did that for me. Because now I'm like, okay, what numbers am I at? What's my email list? You know, who showed up? Who can I, you know, CRM? What about this customer who comes to every show? How am I going to reward them? You know, that is where I noticed the most growth in my audience. Whereas before it was like, okay, you're just banking on some algorithm on social media for it to hit like a million and then you get 1% of that so you can gain like 8,000 followers or whatever. Yeah. And then, you know, just play the lottery. So I hate producing and I love producing. Like I love what it does for you, but also you got to really have grit to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I produced shows at Flappers when I first started and I produced shows out in Agora Hills, a couple of different places. And then the pandemic came and you know, we haven't done shows and I haven't started another one up yet. Just cause I'm like, do I want to get back in that? It's a grind. It's hard. That's not it's not an easy, easy job at all. Like you're producing shows. You're like, okay, here we go. Let's start this roller coaster. Cause you got to start, build it up, get everybody there, do the show. And then afterwards, like, all right, down. And then it's like, let's start it again for the next show. And it's just like, keeps doing that over and over again. It just can burn you out. That's why I like the podcast. It's like, I know every week this is going to go out. I know every week people are going to listen to it. People also know every Tuesday it's going to happen. I think I don't even remember what episode we're at anymore. So many episodes. But we've been doing it since like 2017. So it's like you do these things over and over and over again and you build something out of it. Right. But I also am.
Okay. Round two, name something that's not boring.
A laundry. Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumba.
ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm a curmudgeon. I don't like social media. Like, I hate social media more than anything on the planet. I don't know about you. How do you feel about that?
Unfortunately, I also hate it. And I regretfully say that because I feel like that's the thing that is giving comics more opportunities. Unfortunately, yeah, it's not how funny they are. It's some places, especially in LA. I don't know about other places, but I know it for sure in LA, they will straight up tell you to your face, like, yeah, you're super funny, but you have less than 10,000 followers, so you can't do anything for us. And I just think that's really unfair because, you know, the people that get to go up, like, they just go up because of the following. And that is kind of ruining comedy. And I don't know if you've noticed, people are putting laugh tracks in their bits online. And I'm like, I know that place. It has 8 seats. And it does not sound like the studio audience that Seinfeld had, you know, like, they're putting in this like enormous laughter, like it's Madison Square Garden. And as a comic, you know, all the places and you're like, there's no way that's happening, but they're also gaining a following from that. And I just think it's so dishonest. Like, you can doctor so many things on social media, you know, and I just, it does kind of like hurt my heart. I was like, ooh, this is really bad for comedy.
But it's not going to pay off for them in the long run, right? Like, right now they might have that trajectory, but once people go to the show and they do, you know, 10 minutes of material, I know that only that one joke is good, or even and they find out, you can only hide for so long, honestly. Like, you're gonna get busted once you do a lot. Like, you can only fake it for so long. Like, comedy, people know they're either gonna laugh or not laugh. Like, you know, and you know that as a comedian, you're watching a show and you could watch somebody start a joke and go, nope, that's not going to go well. And you could just like watch them go through and they get off stage like, I killed that set. And you're like, no, you didn't. You killed the room is what happened. Like, the room is dead. Now the MC better go reset that room or we're all going to fail right now. So yeah, I can't believe people are really putting laugh tracks on their stand.
Oh yeah.
That's not okay, man. Like, if you guys are doing that, don't do that. That's not okay. Be honest, right? We all have bad shows and good shows, right? We've all done it. I did a crazy rant the other day about bullying on a show where I had to, like, I already performed my set, but I had to wait for someone to come on. So I asked the audience what they want to talk about. We talked about bullying because one dude was a school counselor and it was just weird. It was a weird impromptu thing. There were funny stuff in it, but I was like, I would never talk about that again. Like, it was just right. That I was like, okay,
let alone go and put a laugh track in there.
Like, I mean, people laughed and it was funny, but it was also like, it was that uncomfortable laughter, you know, uncomfortable laughter.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about bullying, right? Kids and bullying, that's a big thing. And so some things were like kind of funny in it where I was talking about me being bullied as a kid or whatever. And that was funny. But when it came to like modern kids being bullied, like, it wasn't as funny. We're trying to figure out like what's acceptable. What is bullying? What is this? So it was just fun. But, I remember my buddy, David Studebaker, came on stage afterwards and he's like, that is the most unlikable James has ever been on stage ever in his entire life. And I was like, there you go. He's going to talk about bullying and encourage bullying. I said, no, I only encourage bullying against me and also bullying my kids. Like, I bullied my kids. And he was like, all right, whatever. So it's just whatever you have
that
to
happens.
Know. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Part of life. It's well, yeah, no, I have always been bullied. Well, I shouldn't say until recently, but like as a kid, I was always, always bullied because it was, it's the like one time there was a lice outbreak at school. So my parents did the smart thing and they shaved all of my hair. And everybody thought I was a little boy. And, you know, this was before they, them and all this stuff was politically. And I got made fun of all the time. And it was ridiculous. Like, just the amount of bullying I got from teachers and students, but there was teachers too. Teachers, they would make fun of my name. They would be like, oh, she doesn't know anything. Like, that was always the thing. Like, she doesn't know, because the only thing I knew how to do was make fun of stuff. And that was it. And they just didn't care. I cheated a lot on tests and stuff because I just
wait, nobody was cheating off of you when I was growing up. If there was an Asian or Indian kid in your class, you cheat off them. They were the smart ones, right?
That was not me, sir.
my best friend growing up was an Indian kid named Chirag, who was in a wheelchair. like legit. And I would cheat off of him. He would let me cheat off of him. We were homies.
Oh my gosh.
But I would also get beat up on his behalf because kids would make fun of him. I was the smallest kid, so kids would pick on him, and then I would get into a fight, and then I would get dunked in the garbage can instead of him. And it was like, that was the whole thing. Like, well, I'll take the beating so he doesn't have to. Also, I wanted to be able to get good grades, so he was cool like that. So it was a symbiotic relationship, you know what I'm saying? So,
one person did cheat off of me and totally failed the test. So they learned their lesson.
I remember someone tried to cheat off me one time. I think I was like in high school. I just moved to Vegas from Texas. Someone tried to cheat. I was like, no, don't. For your sake, don't. Let me fail on my own. Don't fail with me. Let's not do this as a team. And they were like, really? You seem smart. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm an idiot. Like, don't cheat off of me. Like, okay. So they didn't, thank goodness. But like, imagine having to tell somebody, don't cheat off me. Not because I don't care about, like, yeah, I don't want you to cheat. But also, I'm dumb. You're going to get a worse grade if you cheat off me. Just use your own brain for now. That's the worst. So you run that. How did you get into the Netflix thing? I want to hear that story. The Netflix is a joke festival.
I performed at an open mic in LA. And the person who put the mic together messaged me. And I was like, me? And they're like, yeah, I had a dropout. Like, I was basically like a last minute ad. They're like, somebody dropped out. And like, and they had just met me. Like, they had no clue who I was until that night. And I was in the truck, and I heard my messages go off on Instagram, and I was feeling a little bit like disappointed, and, you know, not disappointed, but just like, like, when am I going to get somewhere? And I got the message, and then I like tell my husband, and I just started crying. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm being recognized for something that I worked hard at. And it just felt so good. It was so amazing. And that show was so much fun. It was like, everything about it was so, it was like magical, because there was 300 shows in LA that week. Yeah. You know, it was nonstop comedy everywhere, and everything was packed out, all the theaters. And then, I don't know, I just thought it was so much fun. We took so many pictures with that Netflix as a joke block, and we were like, can we take this home? But we had to return it. So
now, where was the show at? Where was that show at that you did?
It was at the El Capitan Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In North Hollywood, like, you know, where the Federal is, like across the street from there. So,
yeah, that's nice. I've been in that theater for a shoot for, what's it called? Lethal Weapon, the TV show. That was like one of my first big PA gigs was in that theater for Lethal Weapon.
Oh, wow.
TV show. Yeah. So I remember going in there and be like, wow, this is awesome. And yeah, the Federal's right around the corner right there as you come out and go around the side. So yeah, that's super funny. Wow, that's amazing. Well, small world. So what's your goal? Like, do you set goals at the beginning of the year to like things that you want to accomplish in comedy? Because I do that. I don't know if you do that, but what are your goals for this year? What are the things you want to accomplish? Do you know? Or you don't have to talk about it if you want to.
Oh man, I honestly, like, the thing that we both hate, I really need to grow my social media presence. So that's like,
I'm reading marketing books right now.
Yeah. At this point, it's getting a little bit desperate, you know, but I see my friends coming up. Like, I see people that, I just did a show with like 2 months ago, and I went to go message them on Instagram. Now they have over 100,000 followers. So I think there's a peak happening, and people are hungry for comedy. So definitely that's going to be my goal, is to just clean up my Instagram and figure out, you know, how I can put up content that's more relatable, I guess, because I think that's what people are more concerned about. Like, they don't just want to hear something that's funny, because they're like, what does this have to do with me? And people are more concerned about themselves than anything. Yep. So I got to crack the code on that. Because right now I'm only posting videos of like crowd work, because, you know, some of the networks, they'll call you up and they'll be like, well, we need something that's never been aired. So you have to I can come up with new material on the fly, and that's all good, but I'd rather do something that has been tested over a period of 6 months or a year, you know, because I know without a doubt that it's like completely solid and it doesn't have any cracks, you know? So I want to do that. I really right now, because, you know, with the baby and everything, she's only two. So I'm basically like taking care of her all day. And then, you know, I do my shows and stuff. But like before she turns four, like I want to be established so she can go to a good school, like a little kindergarten or whatever, pre-K, and she can have her situation taken care of. And I don't want to be like the loser mom who's just like, all right, I'm going to go to my fifth open mic. And then, you know, I just lost $25 tonight. And that's my budget for comedy. Like I'm just constantly bleeding money. So my goal is to monetize stuff, because that I think that's really important. Like I want to do this for the rest of my life. I don't want to do any other job. I don't want to do a part-time job. That's just not me. I'm going to do a horrible job if I do. And I'm going to end up lying to the person who I'm in the interview with, because I'm not interested, you know? So I don't want to do any off work, because I've done that for my whole life. So I like this comedy thing is just, it's do or die. Like I got to do it. There's nothing else that I want to do. And my family's constantly like, well, you can work at our business or this or that. And I'm like, okay, but only if you need like a clown. If you need a performer, I'm there and I could help you, but I can't do anything else. And I choose not to do it. And I have like 50 notebooks that I go through per year that I'm like, I got to organize my material, get my content ready. And so that's kind of my goal. Like, I don't want to be famous. Like, I don't care. You know, it's not about that. It's what that's going to be hard. Like, then I can't go to Whole Foods by myself. You know, I can't.
Thank you.
You know, you get your freedom taken away, but if I do become famous, whatever, but that's, for me, that's not really the goal. The goal is really to be able to do something I love and have like an honest living, you know? Right. And I feel like, and I'm not saying this as a dig on anyone else, but I know the people I worked with at that company and other companies that were extremely unhappy with what they were doing, because they knew that that's not what they want to do, but it was such good money that they just put up with it. And now I'm in a career where it's like, you don't even know where the money's coming from. So, you know, I love it, you know,
yeah.
There's no other way to quantify what's going on besides how much time I put into it. Cause it's not like I get paid a whole lot for anything. So, you know, that's my main thing. And I just want to like help people through comedy, like this show I'm doing to help the, you know, women. And then I want to put on more people that are underrepresented. And I want to do something that has like an impact on people. Cause I really love people, even though I say I don't, and you know, you have to have some kind of attitude for your act, but like, I really, really do care about people. And I feel like if we take care of our people, then that's where all the healing starts. And, you know, and I really do believe comedy can, it could be world peace if we have more comedy. Let's just, yeah. I'm just going to go out there and say it. If more people are happier, they're laughing their butts off at a comedy club, then that negative atmosphere has been lifted. And I've had many people come up to me after shows saying that they just felt horrible. They wanted to end things. They did not like their life. And I'm like, wow, all of this. And then they come to the comedy club and they're leaving happy. And how does that happen? That is, it's like, quit your therapy and come to a comedy show.
Right.
You know?
Right. No, that's the truth. I feel that's the thing is I don't want to be famous either. Like I just had Wayne Fetterman on, and Wayne Fetterman's been in like a ton of movies and been in everything or whatever. And I go, you're lucky. You're at the level of fame where you can have jobs and be tour and whatever, but no one's waiting outside the bathroom stall for your autograph or whatever. That when he's like, that's not fame. And I'm like, that is fame. That's a good level of fame to have. Like, I want to be that famous where it's famous enough where like, yeah, I can make a living off of it, but not where I'm losing. Yeah. I can't go out shopping. I can't go hang out with my family. I can't go eat dinner or whatever. I don't want to be bothered. I want to be able to, you know, do it. And then I want to also be famous enough that I can go do like tours for the military, where I can go to like, mm-hmm. bases in the Middle East or go places and cheer up the troops. Cause I know what it's like being in the military and going over there and being feeling, yeah, you have all your people that you work with, but you're missing your family and feeling like you're missing out on home and you're missing out on life mm-hmm. because you're in the Persian Gulf or you're in Afghanistan or you're in wherever you're at away from everybody else. And go there and make them laugh or whatever. That's how famous I want to be. Like the new Bob Hope. No, I don't want to be like the new Bob Hope, but I want to be able to go do stuff like that. Like go do those kind of things. So
yeah,
I feel you on that.
Yeah. That's me too. That's like, that's the goal. Like just to get people in a better place and take care of ourselves. We have to do that. That's our lifestyle. It's not greed. It's a service and we're putting in work, you know, and the stationery is expensive because I only buy Japanese stationery.
I use Google Docs. I can't have stuff anymore because it just like keeps filling up space. So I just do everything in Google Docs and I file it by the date and I file it by topics or whatever in Google Docs.
Really?
Like I'm that guy. Yeah.
I don't want China to steal my jokes. So I put it on paper first and then I put it on the cloud. And
listen,
China,
if you can steal my jokes, go for it. If you can do my jokes better than me, go for it. I don't think anyone's going to want to hear about American Girl dolls in China. I doubt it. Nobody's going to want to hear that joke. People in America barely want to hear that joke. Okay.
So. Make it work, China. Make it work.
There's a Chinese comedian reading about American Girl dolls there. People are like, wait, what? We don't have those. Yeah,
I'm sure they do that. You know, the number one most famous comedian online is Chinese.
Really?
Yes, I looked it up. I'm telling you, I'm getting into the stats, James. I'm looking stuff up and I found out the guy with the most amount of views and likes and everything, it's a Chinese guy, and each of his videos gets at least 1.4 million to 900,000. It's insane. And
is it original material or is he stealing material?
I don't know. It's Chinese.
That's true. All right. I guess this makes sense. Oh.
Fair enough. They don't have captions. So you can't translate it.
Oh, smart. So he probably is stealing jokes. Imagine him doing Chris Rock bits and he's usually dropping the N-word. You're like, bro, what are you doing?
Yeah. Instead of the N-word, they just say Uyghur.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow. That feels dirty. That feels dirty to say. People think I'm a narc. I literally had someone, I was doing a show and I was talking about something and they're like, are you a narc? And I was like, seriously? I don't like what? So I'm trying to figure out how to turn that into a bit and stuff, but it's like, I don't understand. I'm a nice person. I'm just a big fat teddy bear guy. Like, I don't understand what the deal is. So. But it looks scary.
A narc? What?
Yeah.
You know, they're up to some shady stuff if they ask you if you're a narc.
Well, I mean, I did a joke about, I could smell like weed in the audience or whatever. So I just made a joke about it. And I was like, don't worry, I'm not going to rat on you guys. They're like, why? You're a narc. You look like a narc. And I'm like, I'm not going to. Okay. You're out, sir. You know, like it should be. You're getting arrested. Where's that guy at? You know?
It's always the weed shows. I don't enjoy weed shows.
No. Yeah, no offense. Everything in LA smells like weed. Now.
Everything does. Yeah. But everything. But like I just did a weed show like 3 days ago and I don't smoke and I don't drink. I inhale something, I started coughing, which means they got into my lungs. Oh. And then I was like all woozy and I was like, oh, and I'm on stage and I'm like, what are you guys looking at? Like, I just didn't feel like myself. And then I remember I offended some couple because they were like whispering, you know how you get paranoid on weed. So they were like whispering to each other. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? And they're like, why does it matter? And they like talk back to me and I'm all like, I hate weed. This is not cool. This is not fair. This is not me right now. But it is all about swag. Like, you know, they do. If you have a certain look or a certain content or things that you talk about, you know, especially for clean comedians too, they're like, well, why should we trust you? Because, you know, you're like policing your content and you're censoring yourself and stuff. And you're not. Sometimes the thing I get is like, oh, are you afraid? Are you afraid to go there? And it's like, dude, I just did a joke about shootings, you know, and I can go there. I have 9/11 jokes. I have all, but I feel like something happens at the weed shows that maybe I need to wear one of those N95 masks or something to filter it out.
They don't work. They don't work because I smelled someone's perfume in the grocery store. Like, they're obviously not working. If I can smell your perfume, bro, like, no, it's not working for me. So you're
what
still
do I do? We're like a scuba mask. I'm just gonna go snorkeling for air.
Put on a full like face mask that has a thing in there. You sound like Darth Vader telling jokes,
right? I just show up last minute, like when it's my time to go up, and then just, you know, do my stuff and then get off the stage as fast as I can.
Did you ever see those photos of like kids in band class during the pandemic who were like in their own little sealed thing playing their their stuff? You just go on there with one of those things on over you just so you don't just have to smell any of it. Got some leg holes out so you can just stand in it and walk up. Just the big plastic mask thing over your face.
I'll just be the bubble girl.
Yeah, but I don't mind it. It's just, I don't want to smell that 24/7. Like when I went to New York last time, it smelled like that, like everywhere. And I was like, oh, I can't. Like after a while, it's like, it's too much. It's like, I get that you want to enjoy your stuff, but we all don't need to enjoy it with you. Like it's not a community thing. Like it's a you thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's too much. Know. It's not even like, I don't know. I don't want to talk crap about them. I know that, you know, they got like prescription marijuana and stuff. So it's all good. But when it's like blowing in my face and then hair, you know, hair absorbs because it's porous. Yep. So then you smell it. And then my husband's like, what were you doing at the show? And I'm like, I swear I was only doing comedy, nothing else.
Yep. And I don't mind anybody doing it. If you guys want to do it, do your thing. I'm not here to judge anybody. I just don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it on me. I don't want to smell it. Just like, I don't know. It doesn't bother me. So
I'm lightweight.
Yeah, you know? I don't drink or smoke or anything either. So it's like, you hit me with that, I'm done. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, so what is, where can people find you? Where can they find your comedy? Where can they find all the updates of your shows and where you'll be on? And I'll put this all in the show notes too, so everybody knows.
Yeah. You can find me on my website, nishyxl.com. That's nishyxl.com. I post all of my latest shows there where you can get tickets. And on my Instagram at nishyxl, nishyxl, that's where I post all basically my crowd work and like moments from shows. And yeah, I would love a follow on those because I worked hard. I didn't hire a $2 Filipino guy to create it. I did it all by myself. And
her website is amazing, you guys. Her website is amazing. I was like, oh, who did your website? Like, I didn't have to do my website.
He's like, I want to link all my stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please like, subscribe. If you are not following this on YouTube, we are at 604 subscribers. I know that's not a lot. I want to get to 1,000. I want to bring, I know you guys are listening. I know you guys watch. So while you're there, just click the subscribe button. Just say, hey, I'd like to subscribe, James. I'd like to know. And you're going to get more stuff. The premiere episode for Wayne Fetterman is up. You guys should be able to watch it. Go watch that. It's amazing. Wayne drops some amazing knowledge bombs about the history of stand-up. We get deep into the history of stand-up. We nerd out. It's super fun. There's so many good people that we have there. Go watch some of the old episodes. Steve Rogers, Deanna Lane. Like, we have so many people who are there. Go check it out. Subscribe. I want to put up more stuff. When you subscribe, that means I can make more things, and then we can get more stuff, and everybody can be happy. So let's get that going. Thank you so much again. Please like, subscribe, have a great one, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.